This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on today's episode, I'm chatting with William Ivy Long. Welcome to a special Tony edition of the RDU on Stage podcast. My guest today is the winner of 6 Tony Awards for his work designing the costumes for Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, Grey Gardens, The Producers, Hairspray, Crazy for You, and 9. This year, he's nominated for 2 Tony Awards for his work on Beetlejuice and Tootsie, and Beetlejuice marks his 75th Broadway show. He's also been working hard on the musical Diana, about Princess Diana, which had its out-of-town tryout earlier this year at the La Jolla Playhouse, as well as Marie, Dancing Still. And on top of all that, he's also the immediate past chair of the American Theater Wing. This is my 3rd time interviewing award-winning costume designer William Ivy Long, and each time he's regaled me with colorful stories about the theater and his North Carolina home. Here he is talking about his Carolina beginnings and the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, activist, and professor he affectionately calls Uncle Paul.
Well, my first memories are of the Raleigh Little Theater. But then my next theater memories were the Playmakers. And going back, I'm just going to jump back and forth because I don't want to forget to mention, I also knew all of my life from 0 up everyone from Chapel Hill who founded the Lost Colony. So whether I was in the wintertime at Raleigh or at Chapel Hill, the constant, as in has been in my entire life, is the Lost Colony. And as you well know, Prof. Koch was the founder, of course, of the Carolina Playmakers. He was also the eminence grise of the Lost Colony when the people of Dare County and of Roanoke Island wanted to create a play or a pageant to celebrate their history. They called on the resident guru of Chapel Hill, Prof. Koch, and he found them, of course, Paul Green. So it all interacts, and I probably will go back and forth in my comments about Lost Colony and Chapel Hill Playmakers, because they really were part of the same big event, which was telling the stories you knew. Prof. Koch was, his mission was to create a whole subset of theater called the folk drama. And he encouraged his students to write what they knew. And this actually overlaps in a big stretch with the Lost Colony, because that's telling the folk drama of 1587, what happened on Roanoke Island. So it really is part and parcel of the same instinct. Tell your history. Tell your history.
It's so fascinating to me, the history of theater here in this area, because I think it's surprising to people in other parts of the world to hear what a rich history we have here theatrically.
It's so rich, and it lasted for decades. I've been fascinated my entire childhood with hearing these stories. And, of course, my father was a playwriting student. My father, William Ivy Long, also received the first scholarship for a high school student in playwriting in North Carolina to Chapel Hill. His teacher had been in high school, Bernice Kelly Harris. She encouraged my father to write plays about what he knew, and so he did and was accepted full scholarship playwriting. That took him off the farm. Otherwise, my parents wouldn't have met, but I would have been a farmer. And then skip to how many years later when he got his master's, Paul Green was his thesis director, and I have the signed copy of that play that with Uncle Paul. Oh, and I knew Uncle. I called him Uncle Paul. I knew him my whole life. Was he one of my heroes? Let me tell you, this is not interesting. The reason Paul Green is my hero is kids, children to kids, to anybody. That eureka moment when you have a light bulb go off can happen at any time. You become aware of some great truth and you go, why did I not figure this out? Well, my big light bulb moment happened when I was in the 10th grade or 9th grade. Anyway, first year of high school. And I was working on a Saturday morning at my father's scene shop at Winthrop, making animal heads, I think, for Alice in Wonderland. I was bent over. I remember I was working on this, and I had NPR was on. Now, mind you, when I was in high school, I don't know what that was, but we're talking the 60s, okay? The early, mid-60s. Paul Green was on. And I said, oh, Uncle Paul's on. My goodness. And he was holding forth about the death penalty. And it was a half an hour, Paul Green explaining why this was immoral and evil and short-sighted and all the things that it is. And I remember I was sculpting in clay one of the John Tenniel imageries, you know, the heads of the butler as a fish or something like this. I remember that. In fact, I think that was what it was. And I thought, oh, my God, he is talking about morality, about life, about how we should behave, about politics, about everything. And we're talking at the highest government level. He spoke to the Congress about this. He was brought to Washington. And here he was talking to NPR. And I made the connection about theater and life, theater and values, and theater and morality, and the greater good. It all came together. Can you imagine a 10th grade student finally figuring out why people do write plays? Oh, it was a major moment. Major moment. I tear up when I think about it now.
What do you remember the most about him?
I remembered Uncle Paul as very tall and always in a black suit, white shirt, and black tie, and wearing a black hat. This is a strong image. And my father didn't wear a black suit and white shirt and black tie and black hat. He wore suits, but only on Sunday. But Uncle Paul wore them all the time. And I remember this strong creature leaning down to me and calling me Billy with this very deep Southern drawl. At the same time, the directing teacher and also design teacher at Chapel Hill was Samuel Selden. And I called him Uncle Sam, laugh, 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 Uncle Sam. And so Uncle Sam was the first director of The Lost Colony and then ran the directing program, and Paul Green ran the playwriting program at Chapel Hill. So you see back and forth, and the two titans were Paul Green and Sam Selden. Sam Selden also wrote one of the very early textbooks on stage design. And I remember reading the one as a teenager in my father's library. Now then, mix in here, and I'm not telling this chronologically, but she who came in the late 30s to teach playwriting was none other than Betty Smith. This is before her big breakout book, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. She taught playwriting, so my father studied playwriting with Betty. Skip to, and I'm skipping all around, when I went to graduate school at the Ackland Art Center in art history, Betty said, let Billy come and stay with me. So Billy lived with Betty Smith for 3 years. By the way, she had been one of the first class of playwrights at the Yale Drama School. So didn't I apply to the Yale Drama School and get in? Shifted my whole focus. So you see memories like this of the playmakers and the theater and Paul Green, Samuel Selden, and Betty Smith all influenced my life, and it totally part of it.
When I visited your studio last summer, you were starting the research for Diana. We couldn't talk about it at that time, but we can talk about it now. Talk to me about the challenge of designing costumes for a show about a real person and a fashion icon versus a fictitious character like Beetlejuice.
She was the most famous woman in the world when she died. It is very hard to talk to youngsters today to explain the impact she had. But the impact helps me understand such a phrase as the face that launched 1,000 ships. To try to figure out someone who had a universal appeal, who united people in Guam and Thailand and Russia and the rest of the Western world. She was so appreciated, first of all, for her freshness, her innocence, and her beauty, and then for her behavior in an untenable situation, comma, experienced by probably half the people in the world, comma, meaning the marital confusion, and then her second act, which was really just beginning, the landmines, the AIDS patients, the Mother Teresa, how she shifted and made her own life is being celebrated, but we have to get the tone just right. And so getting the tone that can explain to people who already know the story, and also for the youngsters who probably come in because they've just seen pictures of her, but they don't know the story. So how do you approach telling a story about this sort of iconic person? My part, I don't have the responsibility of the entire show, which is the playwrights. Joe DiPietro has written the script, and Christopher Ashley directed. And then David Bryan from Bon Jovi, he's the keyboardist of Bon Jovi. He has written the music and lyrics. Major part of this, of course, as you can imagine. So they're the creative artists. I'm supporting this by story by story, week by week. I have around my studio, you saw I was creating the what did she wear this day, then this day. Look at her fashion sense. Look when she started finding things for herself after the, you know, palace was telling her what to wear. And so my trick, my assignment, which became very clear from the minute I started putting those images up there, is, well, two things at once. I'll start with the overview. I didn't want us to laugh at the shoulder pads because that we didn't laugh at them back then. That was what people were wearing, those outrageous dynasty shoulder pads. So I needed everyone to think, as we did then, that everything she wore was beautiful. So what you do when you have an extraordinary silhouette of shoulder pads like that, and which wasn't that long a period, but it was a main period, I have softened that silhouette. So I've adjusted it through a filter of today, okay? That's important. Then the second thing is, our Diana is 6 inches shorter than the real Diana and very voluptuous and curvaceous and delicious. Diana was all of those things, but she was a tall drink of water. She was almost 6 feet. And proportion-wise, that if you just think for a second, I couldn't put all of the embellishments, all of the details. I had to simplify and streamline basically all of the looks for our Diana. Now, people are going to see, people do see them and think that they're copies. Well, there are no more copies, I can tell you. I've even shifted some of the colors to make our Diana, Gina DeWall, to work best with her skin. She is English, so she has that sort of rose. She flushes. She has but, you know, it's not the same skin as Diana. So I've shifted both the silhouette, all three, the silhouette, the details, and the color to suit our Diana. It's going to have one more step before it comes to Broadway. I'm not exactly sure whether they've decided where the next step will be. You know, you take shows all around, like Beetlejuice, we tried out in D.C. in September, October, and Tootsie, we tried out in October, September. So I went right from Tootsie to Beetlejuice. You know, you work on shows for about, a minimum of a year. I think I've been working for a year and a half, almost 2 years on, well, I know 2 years on Beetlejuice and 2 years on Tootsie. I think Diana maybe a year and a half.
From a costume perspective, what are some of the takeaways you learn when you're doing those out-of-town tryouts on a show like Beetlejuice or Tootsie?
Well, specifically Beetlejuice, what we did through our director, Alex Timbers, we went back through his, under his guidance, we went back to Tim Burton, the source of it all. Because, you know, he had an exhibit. He's a graphic artist on his own and had an exhibit at MoMA a few years ago. And, of course, I went and have all the books and catalogs, and we studied them and I tried to get his wrist. Whenever you work on a, you're inspired by an artist, you try to find, it's called their wrist. How did they paint that? How did they sketch that? What is the, like Edward Gorey, for instance, his rich wrist was cross-hatching. You know, lots of cross-hatching. Tim Burton's sketching style was with ballpoint pen or like a marker. I don't use that. I use different things. So I had to try to teach myself how to do his sketches. And by doing that, you get into the source material. We went back to see like his early version of Miss Argentina, for instance, in the Netherworld. She's blue with red hair and a red dress. We did the early version so as not to copy. But we found that the fan base wanted Miss Argentina from the movie. So we did shift that coming to Broadway. We cleaved closer to the film in a few cases. But you learn these things out of town. You learn what people want to see. And in Tootsie, I have been told by people that it rivals the humor of the original film, if not exceeding. It's a brilliant script. And what we have done is we have updated Tootsie to right now, which makes the game so much bigger and so much more important. In today's environment, can you imagine? We have dived in. And so when you're diving in, updating a seemingly lighthearted film turned into a musical, it's not lighthearted anymore. I mean, it stays light, but it's on target. That's what you learn about doing out of town with Tootsie. How is the feminism going to land? How is the whole man taking a job away from a woman going to land? How do all those jokes land? Well, we'll see, won't we?
Kind of going back to that North Carolina heritage of being hands-on, you're very hands-on. You're always sewing sequins or...
Well, I'm going to brag about Princess Diana for a second. I sewed every bead on that wedding dress myself. Some of it I beaded, like the lace. Over Christmas, down at Christmas, I had my beading hoops, and I embellished with the exact description of what they had. It was little flat sequins and pearls. And I did all the lace. Then they put it together, but I didn't get all of it done, so there was still stuff I had to do around the hem and around the edges. And so I spent 3 weeks in La Jolla finishing the wedding dress. And I really wanted to do that. I wanted to be that viscerally connected.
Why is that important to you? I mean, you know, you're at a point in your career. There are people who could do this for you, William. Why is it so important for you to be that viscerally involved?
Well, what I do, I will tell you, it is important for me because I've got the live actor standing in front of a mirror and I am moving proportions around. I'm moving necklines. Now, by the way, my hand sewing, someone really good then comes in after me and fixes it. Except for the beading. I do the beading. But all the alterations I do, I'm pinning them. I'm not really sewing them on a machine. But I am getting the proportion. And it is important to me personally to be involved, that viscerally involved with the creation. But also, that's how you figure out what it looks at. You're looking in a mirror. And my mirror in my studio, if you're standing, it's like 10 feet from it. That gives you 20 feet. So that's really, you're at the beginning of, you're in the orchestra. So it really helps you see what the audience is going to see. when you look in that mirror. And so this proportion from head to toe is very important to get. So that's also why I do it. That's the non-sentimental reason. The sentimental reason is I like to be involved. You know, it gives me a visceral connection. But then artistically and design-wise, I can move the neckline around and say, turn around, let's look at the back, let's look at the front. And I can lie down on the floor. When I'm doing hemlines, I'm always on the floor because that's your head, people's heads in the audience, they're looking up at the knees, you know, where a hem is. So if you don't do that, you can get it very wrong. So I'm always up and down, up and down, up and down on the floor. And that's how you do it. It's part of how I design. I just like to be really that involved.
I know you're working on Crazy for You. What's next for you?
There's a fourth show that just opened out of town. It's Marie, the musical, and it used to be called Little Dancer. It's about Degas sculpting his little statue of the ballet rat that's in every museum. And Terry Mann from North Carolina plays Degas. And we just opened it out of town tryout in Seattle. And so I've had four shows open. I will have had four shows open in basically 2 months. Now, they've had a lot of preparation. It sounds more exhausting than it is because everything has its own life, you know. But we did Little Dancer, Marie now, at the Kennedy Center 4 years ago. I didn't make all the clothes. I only made some of the ballet clothes. I pulled everything because we, you know, didn't have a full budget. But I got to make most of the clothes, finished making the clothes for this one. So it was very exciting. You could probably look that up online, Marie at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle. That's where we did Hairspray. So I have quite a feeling about that theater. And this was written by a new musical by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty. Of course, they wrote Ragtime and Once on This Island and a few things. And Susan Stroman directing and choreographing.
For someone coming to New York, other than Tootsie and Beetlejuice, what shows are you most excited about this season or even next season?
I'm looking forward enormously to see Taylor Mack's Gary, which is the continuation of Titus Andronicus, talk about blood, with Nathan Lane. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm seeing this new reimagined Oklahoma. It's a good season.
What do you think Uncle Paul would have said about your success?
I think he would be very proud that I continue to mention North Carolina in every other sentence. And I think, like working on Tootsie, I think he'd be very proud that I was encouraging and pushing the awareness, the embracing the new feminist landscape. And I think he'd be very proud that I was keeping all these things. And in costuming, because I'm not a playwright, but I am an amateur dramaturg. So I think he'd be proud of that. And I'm sure he's one of the reasons that I am so interested in the whole picture. I'm very lucky, by the way. Let me just say, all of this work, can you imagine? I wish Paul Green and Sam Seldon and Betty Smith were alive to see all this that I'm doing. I'm very and my parents, well, they sort of had an inkling, but they died in 1998. So a lot's happened since then.
This year marks the 100th anniversary of playmaking at Carolina, a long legacy that continues today with Playmakers Repertory Company. William plans to return to Chapel Hill sometime this fall to commemorate the centennial with a talk. In the meantime, you can see his costumes on Broadway in Beetlejuice and Tootsie, or closer to home in Manteo in this summer's The Lost Colony. More information about Playmakers and The Lost Colony can be found in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to the podcast, follow us on social media at RDU On Stage, or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next week, I'll see you at the theater.